Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So, whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 447.JB1616, certificate number 41907, Faces of Death. Is this your spooky Halloween show?
Halloween?
You say Halloween.
Halloween.
All good-hearted people say Halloween with the...
Halloween.
With the short A.
We here say Halloween in the Northwest. I don't know where you're from. Korea or something.
You think it's a regionalism?
I think so. Halloween.
Do you hollow things instead of hallow them? I mean, I guess you hollow out the pumpkin.
I do hollow
out the
pumpkin.
Is that why it's called Halloween?
There are very few things in the world I hallow. What would
that's a problem with you, that you don't hallow enough things.
I don't hallow any weens.
Do you hallow the band ween?
Definitely not. I don't ween the band hallow.
Hallow does sound like it might be some kind of a
hallow.
Speed metal band, right?
Yeah, or
hallow.
Or hallow might be like a couple of brothers from the South that have a like gothic
right.
rock band.
Or if it's just H-A-L-L-O, it could be like some cheeky British lads. Hello, it could be a Britpop band.
How do you feel about horror movies? You know, you have a pretty exhaustive appreciation of cinema. Does that include horror movies? Do you make a distinction between good horror and bad?
I do. I like horror movies, not so much because I like being scared. I don't find that super pleasurable. But so I'm not like, slasher movies, like the gorier and cheesier, the better. But I do like what horror films have kind of become lately, which is really just some mainstream way to show people art movies. Like if you tell people that The Babadook or Midsommar or whatever is a horror movie, people will go see kind of bizarre art cinema, and like legitimate art might happen on the screen in a Hollywood studio movie.
Are there jump scares in The Babadook?
There are.
Yeah.
But I think that those kind of movies often will privilege some creeping sense of unease, unearthly sound design.
Sure.
More than...
A lot of ASMR.
Well, yeah, that's what I like.
Get out.
Oh, it's so soothing. Say
Get
that again.
Out.
Oh, I love that. I wish I had a creepy haunted house that gave me ASMR messages.
Duh.
I don't know about you. Do you like slasher movies?
I don't.
Because
I don't.
You don't like to be scared and jump in a movie.
I don't like to be scared. I don't like to be grossed out. I don't like to be freaked out. Now, I love a psychological thriller and even one that's like scary, but I already have kind of a sensitivity to being spooked. Spooked by the implication that there's a supernatural world that maybe can walk through a portal and come tap me on the shoulder in the middle of the night while I'm working on something.
Honestly, I think being incredibly rationalistic is really what makes me able to watch horror.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I watch a movie, I never think this is very upsetting. I always think this violence is not real and therefore does not trouble me. And when the movie's over, I don't feel like there could be ghosts in my house as I walk back upstairs.
Right.
I feel like, oh, good, I've left the spooky movie, and now I can walk up my normal stairs where normal things happen.
I think of the two of us, I'm definitely more susceptible to the suggestion of you know, if you were to ring a little bell with your toe under the table right now and tell me that it was a dead relative.
What if I just started to sing a Victorian nursery rhyme in a sing-song voice without moving my lips and you... In the garden we play with Jack. And I could do it without moving my lips. You would be like, what is going on here?
You moved your whole mouth, in fact. it's not that, but yeah, I have a predisposition, right? Emotional I can't explain it relative to my otherwise rational mind or the way that I think of the way the world and the universe is ordered. I don't believe that specters roam the earth. And I don't believe there's a government under the North Pole, and I don't think
the North Pole.
The North Pole, and I don't think that that you know the undead are you know trying to solve problems on Earth before they can go to their eternal rest. Yet I will get spooked.
You believe in the Loch Ness Monster and alien abduction, and I believe in Judeo-Christian religion
and big feats. Yeah, that's right.
We both have our little carve outs.
We do. We each have a vulnerability. but scary movies, you know, being startled, I don't like it, and I don't like gore at all. I recoil. You know, I'll like hide my eyes.
My wife will literally hide her eyes, and she's very good at telling when something is gory is about to happen. And I'm the one in charge of being like, it's still going, still going. Okay, they're done.
Yeah, I just don't like it. Don't prefer it. And then, yeah, the idea that, because over the years I've spent a lot of time alone outside at night.
In haystacks.
Kind of. I mean, I've walked through mist-covered graveyards in New England where I went in thinking it was a quick shortcut to the next town and then realized that I was lost in a Vermont graveyard and the fog had closed in and it was 1 o'clock in the morning. And you know, I'm often in a situation.
Graveyards are bad shortcuts. They usually only have one gate.
I know.
To keep people like us from hanging out
there. The old ones, you know, you can like hop the fence.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, I found myself over the years many, many times going, what were you thinking? Why are you here right now? Like this is like the trees are actually creaking in a terrifying way. And you are you thought this was a good idea? Like, because I slept outside a lot when in my traveling years.
But and you never saw any actual haunts or will-o'-the-wisps or revenants.
No, but
Will's-o'-the-wisp.
I had a haunting experience. And it was in Vermont, the U.S. state most full of ghosts.
The most haunted state.
But I spent the night in a pre-Revolutionary War house in Vermont. In one of the bedrooms in the old house, right?
Do you want the haunted section? Do you want haunted or non-haunted, sir?
That was the thing. They put me in the old house. They thought I would appreciate it. I did appreciate it. And as soon as I turned out the light, I felt an incredibly evil presence in the room with me, unmistakable. And I turned on the light and I sat there, you know, kind of hyperventilating and calmed myself down and was like, all right, okay.
It's all in my head.
Let's just go to sleep now. And I turned the light off and immediately just felt this terrible, terrible thing. Turned the light on and stayed up all night until the sun came up. At which point I felt, you know, I relaxed and caught a little bit of sleep. And when I went down to breakfast, I said, you know, they said, how'd you sleep? I said, not very well. I felt an unusual presence in the room that kept me up. You know, I'm not above expressing my vulnerabilities at the breakfast table.
Were they like, oh, that's just Saucy Nick. That's where he killed the children.
No, they all delightedly said, oh, you felt him. And I was like, you bastards. Why didn't you put me in the new wing?
Where nobody feels anybody.
Yeah, the wing that was built in 1840 or whatever, where nobody died and was buried under the cabin. So I was furious, but also intrigued that the owners of the house had a guest room in their home that they knew to be inhabited by a dark specter.
And that delights them.
I guess it's a prank that they pulled on me.
Vermont should take off of the license plates the guy skiing on maple syrup or whatever it is.
Yeah, and just, Verdes Montes.
And just put a picture of a... Do they really show a girl's Verdes Montes? And they should just put a spooky ghost on the license plate.
Like a headless horseman.
America's haunted playground.
If there's
Vermont.
One place you feel like you're gonna see a headless horseman, it's Vermont. And you don't. You right across the border in New Hampshire, all you see are billboards for Taco Bell. But in Vermont, headless horsemen everywhere.
This is the second time we've discussed the Vermont-New Hampshire border.
Yeah, well,
last time it was about lotteries. And this time it's just about how you're going to get possessed by Satan.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but the thing about movies is that I can immediately be like, you know, there's a distancing effect. The thing that happens on the screen, I'm always thinking, this is artifice.
Right.
This didn't happen. And so horror movies do not trouble my soul.
So are you intrigued at all by YouTube videos of ISIS executions?
No, see, that's the opposite thing to me. Like, to me, that actually is. And I even don't want to watch, like, surgeries or whatever. Because there's no distancing effect. There's no artifice. Those are actual fluids squirting. And it's a thing of our time where at least once a week, I will see on the internet some link where it's like, okay, you should watch this, but actually the guy died. Or, warning, this construction worker that goes through the windshield didn't make it. Like, people just pass these around.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they're very popular.
I can't watch them.
How do you feel about videos where people are popping pimples?
I don't understand why it's a thing.
It's a real thing.
Like, to me, that is the horror movie right there, you know?
Just people getting their cysts lanced.
Like, somebody getting, like, their head knocked off in Hereditary would not bother me. But, like, if they'd replaced that scene with somebody popping their pimples, I would have been in the lobby so
fast. I know
at
least two people who have confessed to me that when they get home from a hard day's work, they just put on YouTube videos of dermatologists working on people's skin blemishes.
Let me just take off my bra and watch just like pimple popping.
So relaxing.
Can they express what the appeal is? Because I've never asked anyone.
It's just the gratification. The gratification that you get, I guess, when you pop your own pimple. But there's transference.
There's very little of that. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I get why you do it. It's a little bit painful, and you know it's bad for your skin.
Yeah, but it's that might even be a myth. I don't know. I don't have huge pock marks, but. And I've popped my share of pimples.
Yeah, me too.
But I think it's just that, it's the release. It's the literal release of tension. It's just the tension is
I'll watch somebody cracking their knuckles then.
Yeah.
Like, I want a fluid-free release. Yeah. Like, how come there's just not a video of...
I bet there is.
So somebody stretching in the morning. Ah! Like, one arm is out to the side. The other's kind of crooked, their elbows crooked back towards their neck. I'd watch those videos. That seems cathartic.
There are tons, I'm sure there are those, but there are tons of videos now on the internet, almost an unlimited number, where you can watch real people die in real awful situations. People, not just people jumping off of buildings, but people electrocuted and cut in half and eaten.
What do you think of these? Will you click on these links?
It's the same. I'm the same way that
right, because often there something amazing will happen.
Yeah.
A bus will go over a freeway divider or something.
Incredible things. And I absolutely love the videos where a car rolls 15 times and stops 2 inches from a kid pushing a baby stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wow, amazing. Life is amazing. But the ones where the car hits the kid, I do not want to see it. So what usually when I watch a video like that, I keep the cursor poised over the close X. And as soon as death is apparent, like if someone jumps off a building, I will close the screen before they hit the ground.
You could just not watch the video. Do you like to watch him jump off the edge but not hit?
No, and even watching him jump off the edge kind of traumatizes me a little bit.
Yeah.
But like there are these videos, the number of people, it seems like, who get electrocuted in India by riding on the top of a train and reaching up and touching a power line or something, and then they're shrouded in a ectoplasm or a protoplasm of electrical glow and energy as they are transformed into a cooked person.
Yeah.
I've seen enough of those just by accident. Because it's always fascinating to watch a video of people riding on top of a train, to me. I feel like...
It's worth the trade-off.
As someone who's ridden on top of a train, I feel like that just... That's my idea of heaven. Just sitting on top of a train.
That is your heaven.
Yeah.
I was thinking that... I feel like I'm very proud of myself. I'm patting myself on the back that I don't watch these videos, that I'm a little more high-minded. But honestly, it does no harm for anyone to watch these videos.
I don't know.
Well, the person's already dead is what I'm saying.
Oh, I see. It doesn't kill another person.
It has
person.
No effect on the... And that's kind of how I feel. If I don't click on this, I'm preventing violence. Of course, I'm not. I'm just shielding myself from it. So maybe it's not something that I should feel good about, that I'm inured to death and violence and cruelty.
We've talked a lot on this show, and I think we'll continue to, and it will always be a theme, the continuing debate in our own culture and time about whether or not depictions of violence
beget violence
or normalizes or desensitizes us to violence. Depending on what media you're critiquing and who's doing the critiquing, it can be a real flashpoint of debate in our time. I don't like the emotional effect that it has on me.
So there is one. I'm kind of curious.
For instance, like any video where a child is injured, I can't. Oh, yeah. I don't even want to watch the setup.
Once you're a parent.
But I have watched, kind of gleefully, videos where tanks in wartime cook off. It's described as cooking off, which is a tank will be out on a battlefield and it will get hit with a little missile or somebody will throw a grenade in it. And all the munitions within the tank will ignite and start to burn. And the tank, of course, is a strong device. And so things can burn and explode inside of a tank, and it takes a while for the tank itself to blow up. And you know that there are 4 or 5 people inside the tank while this is happening.
Cooking away. Nobody ever gets out.
No one hardly ever gets out. But it's a incredible fireworks display, and it's sort of the part of it is the film is usually taken from the standpoint of whatever rebel is shooting the rocket at the tank. And so the rebels themselves are rejoicing at having destroyed a tank. And there's a little bit of a David and Goliath thing when you watch a tank cook off. So I've watched those in proliferation, and I know there are men in the tank. And I feel bad for them, but someone who's just walking down the street and gets hit by a truck or chopped in half by something, I don't want to feel pain for them and their families.
Like I will enjoy, I guess my equivalent of the tank cook-off video is, a daredevil, some kind of drunk frat kid or something, tries something stupid and sure enough
dies or is hurt.
Like, yeah, I would say, just gets hit in the nuts really hard or something,
Like, oh, you like skateboard videos where they fall on the railing?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't like those.
Was that a little too visceral?
A little too.
Well, it just seems like it's okay for me to laugh at this. A, this is this person's own fault. And B, there was probably no lasting harm. If this guy can never have kids, honestly, that's probably good for the species.
Right. But the seeing some little teenage kid or 25-year-old guy jump up on a skateboard and then hit the pavement, and you just know that you've hit the pavement. You know how that feels.
He didn't have to do that.
That's true. All right.
He didn't have to do some dumb prank with a video on.
We're going to get a lot of letters from futurelings that are made out of skateboards.
Future skateboard. Once skateboarding becomes the official sport of the earth states.
Right, or skateboards themselves become sentient because so much blood and sweat have spilled on them that they actually become a life form.
The longboards are the ruling class, of course.
But there was a time not very long ago, this may be hard for futurelings to imagine, when you could not just you could not consume depictions of death, violent death or grotesque, gruesome death, or even see dead people. And I don't mean in a sixth sense kind of way, but even see a dead body, that was not, we just didn't have access to that as American people.
It's recent enough that it seems odd to me that we're living in the opposite era now, where my son probably watches videos of actual people actually dying. That seems like the weird time to me.
Have you ever seen a dead body?
I think we've maybe talked about this.
Well, I think we did.
Only at a viewing, I think.
And a funeral.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah. And one case where I actually saw, as I was heading down the freeway, saw a truck tip over coming the other way.
Yeah, we've talked about it. But I think that is a particularly American phenomenon. I think in a lot of countries of the world, you wouldn't been able to escape seeing a dead body. Just because,
certainly for most of history.
Yeah, just because many generations live in a house. Grandma dies under the roof, but other, you know, and there isn't this hermetically sealed death process that we have here, where if someone does die, you close the door and only people, the only people allowed in are...
Right. I need to call some other strangers whose job is to make sure I have no exposure to this process.
They take the person out under a sheet and it goes, from the moment it the body enters the ambulance, no one sees it again. It disappears into a succession of boxes and then either into a furnace or into the ground.
It's because flush toilets worked so well, I think. We just loved the idea that we didn't have to deal with anything awful.
Just, you know, flush the dookie of grandma right away?
Yeah, we want everything in our life to be as convenient as a flush toilet.
Yeah.
Like, I want to press a button or pick up a phone call or send a text and the problem goes away and it presumably troubles others, but not me.
But we do live in a world which has been sanitized. Mm-hmm. And there may be an innate desire to witness death, to
when I was saying it's not consume it. It may not be a virtue that I avoid that stuff. It's because it's what I'm probably just doing is avoiding fears of my own death.
Right.
You know, I don't want to consider the topic. So I'm not being a good person by not clicking on these videos. I'm avoiding a troublesome area.
Human beings are both very resilient to injury and also incredibly vulnerable. And watching other people die from, especially in mundane circumstances, or killed by somebody that's just another klutz. I've never watched an ISIS video of someone getting their head chopped off or like a cartel video, because I have no interest in it. But the idea that you would get your head chopped off just by some other ding-a-ling, not even like a god or a master, but just some guy that managed to get your hands tied before you got his hands tied.
And just for the image.
That's insulting.
This will do nothing except produce pixels of this happening. And that's the only reason why this ding-a-ling is killing me.
Yeah, that's infuriating. And I think if I were kneeling there before the sword, I would be so mad. Just really mad. Not even scared. Just infuriated.
Come on.
But the rise of horror movies the early days of film don't have there's not a lot of horror in them. We started to see, you know, there are vampire movies and monster movies, but not a ton of gore.
From contemporary accounts, though, I feel like people were as disturbed by that stuff as we are today by a very gory slasher movie.
By monsters.
Yeah, just the fact that Boris Karloff had very disturbing makeup, like ladies would hide their eyes because he had sunken cheekbones. That was so scary. They had never seen any scary imagery. So the desensitization thing is probably real to a degree.
And my daughter still hides her eyes if somebody looks, or until a year ago, if somebody looked too Dracula, or if somebody even was like, bah.
Is there such a thing as too Dracula?
Well, not anymore.
I'm a goth.
Too Dracula, too.
To me, there's no such thing as too Dracula. The world is full of people who are not Dracula enough.
Believe me. I know.
You understand.
Well, yeah. I mean, I aspire to Romulan-ness. but it was in the 60s and 70s when we started to get kind of shock movies. And shock movies and nature documentaries, they all kind of came up with more ease, more affordability in making films. You didn't need a giant Cinerama camera.
No, Night of the Living Dead cost Romero, I don't know, $20,000 or something.
Right, you know? Right. The accessibility of that stuff allowed people to explore those ideas, and it became those films were surprisingly successful. People were interested in seeing naturalistic depictions of death and dismemberment. And also very interested in seeing real documentary footage of lions killing wildebeests and shark attacks and so forth.
I wonder if that was controversial, or if you know, a society more in touch with the actual food cycle of where their food comes from is not troubled when a lion eats a zebra.
I think the controversy around those early nature documentaries has a lot to do with the fact that many of them also included the human natives of the region as curiosities, like a lion ate a zebra. And then look at this guy with the headdress and the native dance.
Yeah, there's a lot of racially insensitive and a lot of it posed, like Nanook of the North was, you know, that guy was told to do all his Inuit shenanigans.
Right. There was a famous movie called Mondo Kane, I guess.
I have pondered making Mondo Kane an omnibus entry.
Have you?
Yeah. But maybe at this point we've covered it.
Well, Mondo Kane is you know, from the early 60s, and it's kind of, well, why don't you describe it? You've pondered it.
I don't know if I have a take on Mondo Kane.
I mean, it's an Italian film that is...
It means what? World of Dogs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. World of Dogs, which is kind of an Italian insult along the line of like...
It's a dog's
pig
life.
Pig god. Kind of a thing. But it's like a forerunner to Koyaanisqatsi, which is that it makes an editorial point by just showing... human kind of activities around the world.
Yeah, it's kind of a travelogue, right? Yeah. You see weird behavior in, you know, a native village in New Guinea, but then now we're at a restaurant in Tokyo.
And- yeah, right. It's things superimposed. You know, somewhere in Guinea there, they've taken the most beautiful girl in the village and they've actually locked her in a cage to feed her until she gets fat enough to give as a gift to the tribal leader. And then we go immediately to a fat farm in Southern California where, you know, women who are slightly overweight are working there, working super hard at one of those. Remember those old belt driven fat jigglers?
Oh, yeah. I saw one at an antique store in Ballard the other day.
Supposed to firm you up somehow. Yeah. It was the juxtaposition of these images that was meant to communicate a kind of that human foibles are ridiculous, and that that the degree to which post-industrial quote-unquote first world culture seeks to distinguish itself from so-called third world culture, in fact we're all driven by sort of similar superstitions and arcane behavior.
Yeah, it's not an exploitation movie. I mean, it functions on some of the same levels, but like it was designed and received as an art movie and even nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
The song in it was nominated for Best Song, which I always think is funny, that Mondo Kane came within a whisker of winning an Oscar.
And I think now contemporary viewers would look at it and see it as exploitative and not see it as it was intended, which is a humorous indictment of all human endeavor. Because there, you know, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of candid footage of people, tribal people doing performing their, you know, traditional rite, but it's played somewhat for laughs in contrast to something that's happening in a Tokyo restaurant.
It's just, it started a whole genre of, you know, what they now call Mondo movies, which was at the time these very popular documentaries that would use real footage of shocking, you know, violent, bizarre things, kind of on a Ripley's Believe It or Not level.
Right.
Like back then you could be like, oh, look what the less enlightened people of such and such a land are doing. And, I'm so glad I got this fascinating glimpse into their ways.
And I feel like even in the United States, certainly until recently, or maybe even now, if you live in a rural environment, if you are living on a farm, you're much more accustomed to seeing death than you are if you live in a city.
You've probably got six headless chickens
on
your farm.
Chopping chicken heads off right and left. And if you've ever had if you raised a cow as part of your 4F group and then Dad insisted that it be butchered.
You've eaten chops from a cow you named.
That's right.
And that's just how it is.
These are Daisy Burgers. But you might not be surprised to learn that this kind of Mondo Kane film was very popular in Japan. There was a whole genre of films there that were contemporaneous with the development of hentai and manga that often depicted violence and sort of unnatural supernatural, fantastical acts of depravity, often tied to a sex act. I mean, you know, octopus porn and other kind of...
The sexual angle is new, right? That's not foregrounded in the Italian works, is it?
It's not, but it appealed to some, you know, it appealed to the nation, the film going audiences in Japan that also, I think that, you know, they were producing Godzilla movies. There was a delight in being scared and in being grossed out in Japan that made these movies get a foothold there. And it spawned a homegrown industry of nature documentaries and other films that that depicted sort of racy or startling acts, incidences.
In an area where pornography was hard to come by, you know, people would also go to see some nominally arty Swedish movie just because they knew there were briefly boobs at the 38-minute mark or whatever.
They were going to catch a nip slip, as we say.
So anything that's taboo will get people in the dark to look at it, I guess.
Well, so fast forward to the late 70s. There was a company called MPI Media that was in the United States that was producing nature documentaries. And they were approached by a Japanese film company called Toho Kushinsha.
And is this the same Toho company that does like the Godzilla movies and stuff?
No, but it is the production company that that co-produced Lost in Translation, another great monster movie.
But Bill Murray's the monster.
Bill Murray is the monster.
So it's a big, legitimate Japanese film studio that even does international co-productions.
Right. And they approached MPI Media in the United States to see if they could get some, you know, nature documentaries produced here. This kind of like, you know, Mondo Kane style film where different true incidences or different true incidents were spliced together to make a kind of feature length thing where you see a bunch of lions eat a bunch of wildebeests.
It's not a movie in any way. There's little of an arc. Right?
Yeah, there's no plot. But there is, you know, dramatic music. It's a film rather than just a compilation.
Yeah.
The young son of the owners of MPI Media, who still insists even to this day, being referred to by his nom de guerre, his nom de cinéma, which is Conan Lacillaire.
Whoa.
Conan Lacillaire is a name that he sort of thought was French, and he thought it meant that he was Conan the Destroyer of Worlds.
It's literally a translation of Conan the Destroyer into French.
Or Conan the Killer.
I see.
But it isn't. He got the translation wrong. It's sort of a meaningless, means nothing, but he sticks by it. He had seen Mondo Kane and enjoyed it. And he'd seen nature documentaries where people were, or where animals were getting killed. And he kind of had this flash of inspiration. What if we put together a film where we splice together accident footage, news accounts of people getting, you know, stuff that was too racy for the evening news. He knew that that people had been filmed dying. And he suggested to the Toho Kushinsha people, what if we made a movie of this stuff? The death and stuff.
He would have no firsthand. He's just supposing that this stuff is out there, but the nightly news won't show it.
Yeah, he'd seen a couple of clips of people.
Do you think there was some underground market for this kind of thing at the time, or does that get created here?
You know, snuff films had existed for a long time.
Are they real? I guess I just always thought snuff films were like an urban legend.
Snuff films are mostly fake. There are you know, there surely are snuff films that ended up having a real death in them, but for the most part, they are, you know, they were a similar sort of 1970s phenomenon, where someone, you know, was killed as a, you know, within the film, in the making of the film. The idea here was to get real footage. And so the filmmakers, you know, these young guys, they knew somebody that worked in a morgue. They went and got permission to film in the morgue and filmed an autopsy. And they found some, you know, they found various footage of a car accident here. There's a famous plane crash and the aftermath of the plane crash that was real footage that they managed to piece together. But it wasn't enough to make a feature film. And so they contacted some special effects artists in California. And this was the dawn of the really great era of special effects. And a lot of these young special effects artists went on to become the famous special effects artists in Hollywood.
Like weird makeup stuff.
Yeah. And they created, in some situations, they created out of whole cloth scenes that were, you know, that purported to depict a cult orgy. The most famous one being a group of diners bashes a monkey on the head and they eat his brains. There are alligator attacks and there's an electric chair sequence. These are all were just completely staged as special effects, like fakes.
I've never seen the movie. I wonder how convincing they are. It seems like this kind of, maybe I just have a good eye for it online, but you can tell which stuff that goes viral today is not actually real, because it's hard to hoax something in a way that looks real.
Well, there were other things in Faces of Death, and that's what the film ended up being called. There were other scenes where they had some footage. They had a footage of a woman jumping off of a building and falling. But then they filmed their own fake gore sequence where the film crew runs up to her and finds her, you know, laying dead on the ground. And so they splice the two together in a way that you know it's unmistakable that she did jump off the building and fall. And so you're predisposed to believe that the scene where you see a dead body dressed in the same clothes is part of the same footage. And they did a good job of, you know, or relatively good job given their low budget of making it, intercutting real footage, making the lighting the same, certain, you know, film grain, so that it did appear to be real. Now, to your point, it is totally fake looking. But in a world where people hadn't seen that much actual death, there wasn't as much to compare it to.
Well, today, fake documentary is a whole genre.
Right.
You know, we're primed to be able to see the difference between, you know, a D.A. Pennemaker movie and Parks and Rec.
Right.
You know, we've all seen hundreds of fake documentaries and hundreds of real documentaries. Back then, this Spinal Tap had not really invented the fake documentary.
Right. And this was, it was all presented. So there was a, you know, it was presented as the secret film library of a purient doctor by the name of Dr. Francis Gross.
So it's as if there's some Vatican library, right, of censored stuff.
And he shows up at the beginning of the film and he says, "Welcome to my film of all the death movies that I've collected over the years."
And this is just some actor playing the guy.
Yeah, it's sort of like what's the film series where the ghoul introduces
like
different
crypt keeper.
Crypt keeper.
Does he,
right,
does he do puns? He was like, "It's not summer anymore. Now it's fall."
I have to be honest. I've never seen Faces of Death, and Faces of Death was enormously popular when I was in high school. What happened was the Japanese film company took Faces of Death, took it back to Japan, and it was a huge hit. It played in mainstream movie theaters. Audiences filled it. Some of these like gore movies were bigger than Jaws. Faces of Death came after Jaws, but there was a series of movies in Japan called the guinea pig movies, like guinea pig devil's experiment and guinea pig flower of flesh and blood.
Also faked.
Guinea pig devil woman doctor. Also fake. But very realistic. And the idea, you know, the idea of the first guinea pig movie was, let's depict a woman being tortured and see what her, and the movie purports to be a,
it's like a clinical video,
How much pain can one person take?
I don't know.
It's not,
it just seems like this stuff shouldn't even be legal.
Well, the FBI agreed. I mean, the FBI spent a lot of time investigating this stuff to determine if there was anything real about it. They say in Faces of Death that about 30% of the movie is real stuff.
I mean, I assume no laws are being broken even back then, just if you show, just by depicting actual violence or death on screen. Like, it's hard to say what the statute would be there. I mean, if you're killing somebody, if you're actually torturing the woman, that's one thing. But if this actually is found footage from war journalists or traffic journalists or whatever, I mean, it's hard to see how you would prosecute that.
Well, I mean, I think it was Ted Bundy who said, if you want to catch serial killers, just throw a slasher film festival and take a picture of every single person that walks in, because serial killers are going to love slasher movies.
Huh.
Bundy famously like a liar too, but also I think this was his way of saying,
we live in a, you know, society did this.
Well, not that. I think he was saying, if you are interested in killing people, if you go so far as to actually kill people, you're also very interested in watching movies of it and consuming media about it as well. Not that the media produces it, but that it is part of a sympathetic, you know, kind of, it would scratch an itch.
What do we say now that these things are mass culture? You know, that right. Like every high schooler in America would love to go to a Saw movie. They're all serial killers now, I guess.
But what happened with Faces of Death is, after it became popular, very popular theatrically in Japan, it wasn't much of a theatrical release here. Although, you know, they made it on a $450,000 budget and it made $35 million at the box office, and I'm not sure.
So this is not just some underground thing getting, when this was part of my schoolyard lore, and I always assumed it was some friend of a friend thing. I've heard this tape exists. It was like The Ring.
It was, but in the 80s, the rise of the VCR and the ability to watch a movie like this in the privacy of your own home and not have to go get your picture taken by the FBI and not have to, you know, but to have this be a thing that you could get your creepy friends around and watch it.
You could be Dr. Gross.
It was an explosion. And when I was in high school, whether or not you had seen Faces of Death was basically a question of whether or not you really understood whether or not you had taken the red pill or the blue pill.
Right.
And I didn't want to see it. I was at a party and watched about half of it one time. And honestly, the parts of Faces of Death that make the biggest impact, the parts that people walk away believing in, are all the fake ones. The alligator attack, the monkey brain scene.
Is it just because those are the most memorable?
They're absolutely the most memorable. Because the real death stuff is pretty mundane. You know, like the plane crash is kind of startling. But an autopsy, that's not one where you're going to go like, can you believe it? It was a real dead person on a...
My seventh grade teacher showed us autopsy pictures in whatever, you know, biology. Like, that's not unusual.
Well, one of the things that actually spread the reputation of Faces of Death is that in 1985, a high school teacher named Mr. Schwartz kept his students after class and put in Faces of Death and wanted them to watch it for whatever reason. He believed it was necessary in their education. And two girls in the class, their names were Diane Feese and Sherry Forget, or Forget.
Forget. Is this like Conan L'Escalier or whatever?
But Mr. Schwartz insisted everybody watch Faces of Death. And when it got to the monkey brain scene, these two girls were like, I don't want to watch this anymore. And he, according to them, physically pushed them down in their chair and said, you will watch Faces of Death, this is important. Mr. Schwartz sounds like a real...
It sounds like there might be a lot going on there.
Yeah, right.
Maybe he just loves to watch uncomfortable little girls watch kind of stuff.
Who knows? But either way, their family sued the school, and it became a, it was a news item that these girls had been forced to watch Faces of Death. Actually, they won a $100,000 judgment from the school district. Very curiously, interviewing them many years later, they both, at the time, they said, they were traumatized by it. But later on, they both claimed that it had given them both a kind of morbid streak. Diane Feist became a paramedic, and Sherry Forget considered being a coroner before she joined the military.
Well, that's a formative 45 minutes.
Yeah, Mr. Schwartz really did a job on that.
You could make a list of that. You could make a tally of the number of people whose lives have been saved by by Mr. Schwartz's creepo class.
But very famously, there's another scene in Faces of Death where there's dogs fighting, and it seems like a bloody dogfight where they're killing each other. Mm-hmm. But what they really did was they got two very friendly dogs and covered them with jelly and then filmed them from various different angles where it seemed like they were attacking one another.
But they're really just trying to lick jelly off each other.
Yeah, it was completely faked, but presented in a way, if you put the right film score behind it and as a film goer, you're going in thinking like, this is about, we're going to see something die. You can easily mistake two friendly dogs for...
Yeah, it's the fame. I can't remember the name of the Russian guy who proved that, with the right music and the right context, the same piece of footage can either make someone laugh or cry, happy or sad,
right,
apprehensive or not. It's all context.
Faces of Death on videotape became a massive thing. And on the box, the videotape box, it said banned in 46 countries. Basically daring you to watch it.
Was this all above board? Like were people illegally distributing this, or was MPI or whatever the company's called still putting this in video stores that were not worried about optics?
It was absolutely in video stores. There was a distribution company was formed just to distribute it called Gorgon Video. But it was kind of, there were plenty of video rental places that wouldn't stock it.
I mean, before video places became big chains, I mean, a lot of these places were just
mom and dad.
Yeah. And maybe run by a guy who's making most of his living, getting VHS on porn,
right?
Porn on VHS to lonely guys. Right.
The only countries it was banned in, the UK famously banned it, New Zealand, Australia.
The UK has very strict laws. Like, this day, American movies, if they appear to show like a cat getting hurt, that scene will have to be cut.
Yeah, these movies were called video nasties, and it was a whole genre of film that was very scandalous there. But it was also banned in Norway and Finland, but not 46 countries anywhere close. But the desire during the 80s and during the Reagan administration to ban media was pretty strong, and they were banning rap music. They were banning basically anything funded by the National Endowment for the Arts. But there was a lot of talk about banning them for all the reasons we've discussed, that it violent video games, et cetera, et cetera. The idea that these movies would create. And there were a couple of instances where kids committed murders and then blamed Faces of Death. But at the same time, there were kids blaming Judas Priest.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to say in hindsight. It's hard to do double-blind studies.
Right.
Where you put two groups of kids in a room, you show one of them Mr. Rogers, one of them Faces of Death, and then you see who eats more monkey brains over the next 20 years.
Really interestingly, in the mid-80s, the Associated Press was doing a story on Faces of Death, and they interviewed a video store clerk asking him, how popular it was. And he was like, it's constantly rented. It's one of the most popular videos we have. And that video store clerk was a young, unknown Quentin Tarantino. Have you heard this story?
No, I haven't, but he's obviously America's most famous ex-video store clerk.
Yeah.
So
he was on record with the AP. But interestingly, the imagery of it filtered down into popular culture in a Faces of Death ended up being a whole series. There were four of them.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Four of them all sort of following the similar vein.
And do they all have faked footage mixed in with a few?
And, you know, if you go on 4chan right now, you can find 600 videos of people getting beheaded. These days, it would be impossible to make a Faces of Death movie just because
the internet is now a big Faces of Death movie.
Right. But throughout the years, the VCR years, Faces of Death became continued to be a very popular title, enough that they made four official ones. And then there were all kinds of bootlegs. Anybody that could put together a bunch of death footage would call it Faces of Death 14. And, you know, there was an underground economy for this. There were also, within alternative culture, there was all kinds of interest in vivisection videos and serial killer stuff. I mean, it all, it's hard to say how much Faces of Death inspired what became like a subcultural fascination with dismemberment and accidental death.
Yeah. Just violence of all kinds.
But I think maybe its most famous legacy is that wonderful scene in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom that features monkey brain eating.
Yeah.
Which, you know,
is that inspired by Faces of Death? I think
100% inspired by Faces of Death.
I mean, yeah, if the grossest thing you can think of is monkey brains, that's probably because you've heard Faces of Death kids talking about monkey brains.
Spielberg probably went down to the video store and a young Quentin Tarantino said, "You gotta see this, man.
You gotta see this." And that concludes Faces of Death, entry 447.JB1616. Certificate 41907 in the omnibus. Now, among the other awful things that the internet contains, besides images of construction crane operators falling to their deaths or whatever, is an even worse phenomenon, social media.
Oh.
People just talking at each other all day and saying nothing.
The worst kind of death.
Yeah, death by 1,000 tweets. But John and I were products of our time. Our social media posts were archived in the early 21st century at Omnibus Project on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. I was at Ken Jennings on Twitter. John was at John Roderick on Twitter and Instagram. Facebook was the home of, one lively monkey brain free community, which was mostly full of good feelings and fun.
Everything else on Facebook is tainted by monkey brains.
Yeah, it should be investigated by the FBI. But not the Futurelings group. The ones on Reddit and Facebook are good, in fact. You could support the show, and I encourage you to consider this. If you often listen to the outro of this show thinking, boy, I'm so glad those people are generously contributing to keep the Omnibus Project going. At a very low cost to you, you can feel like you're part of the process. Part of the cause.
Join the Futurelings who are going to make it through the portal of the apocalypse. Ken and I will stand on either side of the gate and
is that what we're promising now?
Check to see if you're wearing your enamel pin.
At the $50 tier, you will actually survive the apocalypse. All the lower tiers, I'm sorry, they will burn. You can donate to the Patreon at patreon.com/omnibusproject. You can send us physical media. Here's a underwhelming postcard of Plymouth Rock.
Oh, well, you would describe that as underwhelming.
Well, here you can't tell the unimpressive scale, but
that picture makes it seem like the date 1620 is right in the middle of the rock, whereas I always think of it as being sort of off kilter. On the rock.
It looks kind of right justified
it
to
does.
Me.
Yeah, maybe.
Unlike Moose, this person writes, Plymouth Rock was smaller than I remembered. Thank you, Leona. Somebody else made a donation and I'm to the Humans Fund, which appears to be a fake nonprofit of some kind. Apparently I donated $149 and you donated $130.
Wait a minute.
I'm a little more generous than you.
Why would my donation get shortchanged?
Well, probably you're a little less gullible than me about this fake charity.
Let me see. What makes you think that this is a fake charity? These are.
To the
Humans Fund.
I think it's the name of a. It's very close to the name of a fake charity from a Seinfeld episode. And Mark, you're always asking people to send you things when their relatives die for some reason.
It's
your own little Faces of Death, except yours is called like Backpacks of Death, Sunglasses of Death. In going through his father's things, Mark just sent you a Marine Band Hohner harmonica that has not been played in 45 years. He found three harmonicas in his father's things and effects, and he sent you fully a third of his late father's harmonicas. And I was on the record as not enjoying the harmonica, although it's not strictly true. I like a Neil Young harmonica or Stevie Wonder, especially chromatic major key harmonica solo. I love it.
How much does that harmonica seem like it's been played?
It says he has not played it since he was 45 years old, 45 years ago by a 6-year-old me. Sanitize accordingly or not. He implies that you might be into that.
Sure. 45-year-old spittle. So, I'm here at thehumansfund.org, and it appears to only be a site where you pay them to give you a card that says you paid.
I hope you don't. This person did not actually pay $280 to send out these phony cards.
Well, no, they do cost money, these things.
But is it one-to-one? Is it?
No. It says, enter the name of a person. Wait a minute. These are not even... These are like fake versions of the fake thing.
This is like Faces of Death. That plane didn't actually crash.
Hang on here.
So if you would like to send us your late parents' effects, we implore you to do so.
Yes, absolutely.
It's the main reason we started this time capsule. Send them to Omnibus Project, P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long this civilization survived. We may, Ken and I, may be killed in the very near future by people who are mad that we would even imply that video games created a culture of violence. I certainly, every time I leave the house, look cautiously out through the curtains to make sure that someone out there who is convinced that media does not create violence isn't waiting to do violence upon me, to defend the media.
Gotcha.
Right? You see where I'm going with that?
Yes.
It's a circular.
Yes, they're so sure that the media doesn't cause violence
that they have a very violent reaction to it.
It'd be ironic.
It would be. It would be a very ironic death for me.
And improbable.
We hope and pray that I do not die this way. Ken thinks that Captain America Winter Soldier is a great movie. So don't kill him. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.